Some of you may know that every 18 months I go to Italy and teach a course there. And some of you have been there with me. And I came across this written by Dante in his Divine Comedy. And it really said something to me when I was there, because as I look around the room, I notice that most of us are either in the middle of our lives, maybe a little bit past, or we're nearing that part of our life, and we start to wonder, what's this all about anyway, you know, and how can I keep going? How is it possible for me to face this next part of my life and really feel that I'm doing everything I can as fully as I can? So this was written centuries before Italy and Italian really existed, it said, this passage that I'm going to read to you. And the beautiful Italian language that started in Florence, this is a little different from it, but I'll just say the first part in Italian that I'm trying to learn. Nel mezzo del cammin di nostra vita, in the middle of the path of our life, I found myself in a dark wood, for the direct, straight way was lost. And I think oftentimes we, for different reasons, we're in a place where we don't know. What do we do now? What do we do with our life, with the conditions of our life, with where we find ourselves now? And it's often a time when, you know, we're grasping, we're trying to do the best we can, of course, but we don't know what to do, and we kind of lose faith in ourselves. And that's why I wanted to speak about faith this weekend, because there's a lot of us who find ourselves in that place where mostly we don't have faith in ourselves. Mostly we don't know, how are we going to keep going? You know, there's so much coming at us in our lives, not just this way, but from inside out too, that we never knew was going to come when it came. So there's a time for a lot of contemplation, of course, for a lot of introspection, for a lot of compassion for ourselves and for others. And so at the beginning of this year, I was wondering, you know, when I looked at my life and I was wondering, where can I go in all the wholesome qualities that I've heard about in the Buddha's teachings and beyond the Buddha's teachings, where can I go to find some sustenance, to find where is a place that's really going to feed me to keep going through life? And as I looked through everything, it just really struck me that it was faith, that it was kind of a no-brainer, you know, that I really have to dig deeper into my own possibility, my own potential, my own capacity for transformation, and with that, the possibility to really see that others also can transform, can come deeply into themselves and realize the happiness that they are wanting to have. Also. So what's going to help us keep going through our spiritual practice, which encompasses everything that we do in our life? It's not just sitting on the cushion. Of course, that's important, but it's everything that we do in our lives. All the outer conditions on or off the cushion that trigger a kind of morose unease in our hearts and minds. I mean, does that sound familiar? Morose unease. When we feel unmoored, you know, we're just sort of like floating away or something. We're not, where's the path now? We're sort of unmoored by sorrow in our lives. Or we're in the wilderness of confusion, like we can't make sense out of what's going on. So, of course, when we look around us, we see that in the place in the world we're living in, this electronic age, everything's going so fast, and there's so much coming at us that, in a way, I have this this kind of mantra that everything's coming too fast, too much, too soon. You know, it's like, what do I do with all this information that's coming in? It's sort of like, I don't know, but I was watching old movies with a friend the other night, and you know, where it was just black and white movies, you know, we were just doing one of those things, the girlfriend and I, and you know, people would just kind of, I can't remember who the actors were, but they would just kind of lean back on a pillar and smoke a cigarette, and I never smoked, but you know, the time in between sentences was very long. And you could actually keep up with what they were saying. And now, I go to movies sometimes and I can't keep up. Everything's flashing so fast, but my grandchildren can. You know, even cartoon things that I bring them to, they can really keep up with everything. Their brains are going so fast, and they're able to deal with it somehow, but I can't. It's like I get dizzy and have to shut my eyes for a while. And so they say, Grandma, it's not scary. And I say, no, it's just too fast. I can't take it all. So it's just so many things happening so quickly. And we live in a world of vulnerability. Vulnerability is not just that we feel hurt or we're feeling so open, but because everything's falling away so fast, right? The picture's falling away so quickly all the time. We don't have time to deal with it as much anymore. It's not only out there, but it's in ourselves that we feel that we live in this sea of vulnerability. Changing circumstances and events outwardly and inwardly all the time. Can't keep up. Do some of you sometimes have to take a break from the news? I mean, just for health reasons, mental health reasons, you just say, I'm not going to listen to the news today. Because it's really, I mean, the next day it's pretty much the same thing. They just repeat it, you know. So we need that a lot. We live in this electronic age where the speed of it all and the closeness of it all, we hear things that are happening far away on the other side of the world, just like boom, right in our face, in our hearts. Climate change. The injustice in the world, the inequality, political landscape here and internationally, the actuality and the potentiality for people in different parts of the world to lose their freedom, to lose their human rights. It's happening all over. It's happening in our own neighborhoods. As human beings, we live in fear. There's so much hunger and injustice all over. And we need to face it, of course, but we need to have the confidence, the faith in ourselves, the ability, the courage to be able to do that. So that's on the bigger scene. On the home front, our children are growing up so fast, you know, and in this fast-paced world, I'm so surprised that my grandchildren, they know a lot more than I do sometimes about what's going on. And they, you know, I just hear from the get with it, Grandma. You know, this is what's happening. Or I'm just so behind sometimes. My eldest one is 21 years old, the eldest granddaughter. And she calls me Nana. And she says, Nana, I got to take you shopping. You're way behind in your... And then there I have another group, the two girls, they call me Tutu. That means grandmother in Hawaiian. And they're always saying, Tutu, Tutu, these are the latest words, and I don't even know what they are. You know, they now when you say bad, that means good. I mean, that's probably passé already, too. So, and so it's just going, they're so fast, and you wonder, at least I wonder for my grandchildren, will they ever really appreciate stillness? You know, will they ever really appreciate what you get from seeing deeply in a still forest pool? So I like to bring them to those places. Or will they ever know the real value of slowness? And just to be slow, how that can be so beautiful. With my two boys, the two grand boys that I have, one time I sat down with them, and their parents are raising them as Christians, and my children, they just, they have their own path, and I respect them and what they do. And so I asked permission if I could teach them meditation. So my daughter said, yes, if I could teach them just to find some stillness in themselves. So we sat down, and I just asked them to be with their breath and to be with their body, something really, really simple, you know. So nothing scary, nothing about the Buddha, you know. And they did that, and they were really good at it. They were really, really good. They tried to sit with their hands a certain way, and I said, no, that's all right, just be comfortable. And then they were just with their breath, and I said, can you do that? And they shook their head, and I said, okay, just be quiet with your breath. And they did, and then it was about 3 minutes, and when I was done, and, you know, I rang the little bell, and it's sort of like they didn't want to open their eyes. And when they opened their eyes, they said to me, Grandma, I never felt that before. And it was like, wow. That, it was heartbreaking in a way. You know, and then one of them said, it's as if the world was lifted off my shoulders. And it's like, wow, we can't lose this. So anyway, you know, on the home front, things are happening like that. And we need to have faith that we can sort of keep it sane. There are changes and challenges within our families, of course. There's the aging process and the health issues which come with that, and the loss of people, you know, loved ones through death or through parting. It's really hard. It's really heartbreaking. And how can we keep our faith through all of this? So I don't have to convince you. You all have your own stories about it, and you know how it is. So this year, for myself and for many around me, that most beautiful quality the Buddha spoke of that's so important for us to remember is the quality of faith. And it's mostly about faith in ourselves that we can do that, because when we can start there and have faith in ourselves, then it's so much more possible to have faith in others, the possibility, their capacity for their own transformation, for their own freedom from whatever is their heartache for them. So in the Dharma, faith is sometimes described not as a noun but as a verb. It's sort of like something that has motion, that is a process rather than something static. It's not a commodity that we have or we don't have. It's something that we actually develop. So that's the verb of it. That's the process of it, something that we develop. So one way of putting it is in a way that is a verb. It's the offering of one's heart to whatever we're devoted to. And a lot of times we don't even sit down to think, what are we really devoted to? You know, it's just like we're just trying to keep up with survival and with taking care of our everyday needs and the needs of people around us. So it's an offering of one's heart to what we're devoted to. So maybe I'll get into this a little later, what we're devoted to in kind of like the deepest or highest or most profound thing is we're devoted to the ability, the capacity for us to be transformed in such a way that we can see life with clear eyes, with an open heart, with compassion, with a kind of wisdom to do what's right for ourselves and for others, to see deeply into life. There's a lot of ways you could say it, but in a nutshell, that's one way. So in our stillness and our silence, even in the midst of our confusion, in the midst of our sorrow, in our uneasiness about the difficulties of life, we can still keep our hearts open. Opening our hearts, opening, it's another verb. Opening our hearts to that possibility over and over and over again without losing sight, not of the end of where we think we're going, because it's always changing where we think we're going. It's actually just opening to the possibility of it over and over and over again. The possibility of keeping our hearts open to our deepest, most profound devotion to life. What is it in life we're devoted to? And there can be many things that kind of interweave with one another, where we can touch into that willingness to give our hearts to what we value most deeply. So it's not a commodity that we have or don't have. It's something we do to keep our hearts open, that we take one step at a time. And we know we can do that. A story I often tell, I think many of you here have heard this in my own Dharma talks, is that this was in a retreat, but you can parallel it to any place in your own life. I was in a retreat. It was called the Retreat from Hell. And that's what I called it. And it was so bad that it felt like I was bound to four horses. Each of my limbs were bound to four separate horses, and they were pulling me apart. They were going in different directions. And there was that much physical dukkha or pain in my body. And of course, the fear and everything in my mind and heart. So I went to the teacher and I said, I'm going home. It was the rolling up the mat time, but it was probably about the third or fourth rolling up of the mat in that retreat. So I said, I can't do this anymore. I just entered the room. I couldn't even hardly walk in slowly or do my bows. I just kind of landed on the floor in a puddle of tears and said, I can't do it. It's too hard. It's just too hard. There's so much pain. And this was just what I was seeing in me. It wasn't, the outer world was fine. I was being fed every day. The weather was okay, was good enough. And I had a bed to sleep in. And it was, even though it was a time I really didn't sleep very much, but I had comfort that I could go to. So there were two monks. One was Upandita and the one from Nepal, Unyanaponika, and they were speaking with one another in their language in Burmese. And I didn't know what they were saying, and they were talking about, I kept hearing the word dukkha. Dukkha, pain, pain. And so then the Unyanaponika said to me, Sayadaw says, And by the way, a lot of the pain was in my walking meditation. It was pain of the heart as well as pain of the body. And so, Unyanaponika says, Sayadawji, or Pandita, says to tell you that whenever you feel that you can't take it anymore, when you can't take another step, you must slowly bend down and pull up your socks, and then slowly stand up again and take another step. And I thought, this must be some secret teaching. But it really wasn't. It was like, it was just a way to stop and begin again. To just stop and begin again. And so that's a lot of what we have to do in our life, you know, in faith, in ourselves, is wherever we are, can we let go of just one moment and just say, can I just take another step? Can I just take another breath? For me, it's like, okay, what should I do now? I'll go wash the dishes, you know, or wash a load of clothes, or mind you, you know, I've been doing this for many years. I don't go say I'm going to go sit on the cushion when I'm home and I'm going through dukkha. It's something really practical. You know, just do something mindfully to get to the next point in my life. So faith, it's planting one seed at a time, taking one step at a time. Deepening our confidence in ourselves to say, I can do it. I can do this and in this moment. And a lot of times, you know, in recent times, people have been saying things about, you know, life and how you can do it and asking me, how do I do it? And I just say, I just take it one step at a time and I just figure out, what can I do now? Who can I help now, myself or another person? And it's really not that hard. So every time I can do that and I look back and I say, I did it, I got through another moment, I got through another day, I got through another moment of sorrow or pain or feeling not so good about life. So planting one seed after another of confidence. It's devoting oneself to living a life with courage. And it's not like your whole life or like your whole day. It's like just that moment or just a few moments. Or sometimes in you know, deep periods of feeling not so good about life, when I do that over and over, I'll look back and I'll say, wow, the whole morning went by and I didn't have one moment of sadness. Doesn't that happen to you? Where you think you can't do it, but you look back and you thought, and then you see, I did it. I did one morning and I even smiled a few times, you know, in between. So I go to this class, this exercise class called, it's called the Brazilian Butt Club. I just want you to know that I'm a normal woman. And there are two Brazilian ladies and they're really great, and I did it because it's near my house and I can go somewhere where somebody can say, do this, put your leg up, you know, this way, and do it like 50 times or something. And I can, you know, hear this Brazilian music and that's all I hear, you know, and the instructions. And one of the music things they play is about just being happy. And I love that video. It's just about just being happy. And they show all these young people and old people and big people, and they're all from Brazil, you know, and people of different colors dancing. And it's so beautiful. And one of the signs, one of the words is that when you feel that there's no roof over you, you know, when the roof has lifted and you're not in a room, even when you're in a room. And that's how it feels sometimes when I have faith in myself. Like, it's just like the whole world is open to me. And all possibilities are open to me. And I'm really living my life. I'm not just living in someone else's life or, you know, whatever someone else's life is that impinges upon mine, that I don't have to do that 24/7. You know, that I can find a way that my own life can be lived. And of course, we're affected by other people and we affect them. And we want to remember that out of compassion. This is by Donna Markova, and she says, "I will not die an unlived life. I will not live in fear of falling or catching fire. I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. I choose to risk my significance, to live so that which came to me as a seed goes to the next as blossom, and that which came to me as blossom goes on as fruit." So what does faith mean in terms of our practice? And by practice, I mean everything. Not just on the cushion, but off the cushion, our work, our children, our elders, our partners. Each of us has come to be on this path, this spiritual path called life, because we have some intuitive sense that it will help us be better human beings, right? I mean, in the big picture, that's how it is. Maybe we have a sense that we can be kinder to ourselves and to others. We can be wiser in a compassionate way. We can be freer of those things that make us feel we're imprisoned by, you know, things that happened earlier in life, later in life, things that are happening around us. That maybe we can be in life and not be imprisoned by all of that, be close to it, but not bound by it. We have some heart-based intelligence that this path will benefit us. And so, because when we look at all that, because we're here, we already have faith. We're already doing the process of faith. We're faithing our spiritual path already. Even we may not think about it that way, or it might be we might think about it and say, "Oh, I just have this little bit of faith." But really, you see that if you keep going, there's so much more. That this is, we're living our faith all the time. So maybe the way we articulate it is that we want to be more peaceful within ourselves. No matter what's happening outside, we want to be more clear and peaceful inside so that we can remain connected with ourselves and with others without being reactive to ourselves or to others. Or we might have this deep sense that it's possible to be more content with where we are, what we have, at ease with our lives as it's unfolding, that we don't need to have this, you know, this deep sense of feeling less than, or that we need so badly something else in life, that we can feel fulfilled enough, good enough. We have this saying in Hawaii, I think we even have it here, because we were saying as we were parking the car earlier that Lindell said, "Oh, my car isn't parked perfectly, but it's good enough," right? So good enough has to be really the best nowadays. It's the best we can do. This is good enough. So we have this saying in Hawaii all the time, good enough, whatever the cooking is, whatever the parking is, However the kids did their, whatever they did, it's good enough. However we did, it's good enough. We can enjoy moments of happiness and just be with it, knowing they won't last, but something else will come. We can just be content enough to know, this moment of happiness is here, let me enjoy it. It will be gone pretty soon. So letting things come, letting things go, it's important to recognize and acknowledge how that is in our lives. One of the most powerful conscious intentions you could make in your life or be conscious, acknowledging of, is what is your highest aspiration? Or what is your good enough aspiration? You know, it doesn't have to be so high that it's so impossible to reach, but what is your good enough aspiration in your life? A lot of us are going so fast and there's so much coming at us so quickly and too much that we don't even sit down to think about it, to reflect on it. So I mentioned just a few things to say what the possibilities are for you to reflect on that. And that's going to be your homework for tonight or for whenever you want to do it. What is your good enough or highest good enough aspiration for yourself in your life? And my experience of the word aspiration is not that it's about a fixed goal, but it's like it's a moving thing. It's something that is you might have an aspiration to be a little more calm, and then you realize that you can get to a place that's really calm, and you realize that this is not just calm, this is so peaceful. I can even get beyond what I think I could go for. And then from there, you can see something further. I know in my own connections with my teacher, Sayadaw Upandita, whenever I would get to a place, he would say, there's more. Or he would say, there's something deeper than that or beyond that. Whenever I thought, you know, this is great, or especially, you know, he would kind of knock the halo off of my head on purpose, and he would always say, there's something deeper than that, more profound. You know, a friend of mine in Italy, she was going through something very painful, so she decided to write a book. So she wrote a book about me. She, not about me really, but about her experience with me and also with Steve. As she considered me her teacher and Steve as a kind of bonus, you know. And so, and I read the book, and she had a quotation in that book that she said she quoted me. And I read the quote and I said, wow, that sounds too wise to be me. It must be really her, you know, through. But she listens to the tapes that when she, and she says, no, this was from the tape. And this is about just staying open to the possibility to be more and more free from the habit patterns that cause ourselves pain. The habit patterns that come up over and over again that cause us pain and cause others pain too. To be able to live with whatever happens, even though we don't know what's going to happen. So she said in this book, this is about faith. This was my talk on faith, actually, that was probably in the early 2000s. She said, quoting me, reality remains unknown and unexpected. Can we surrender to the mystery of life, or must we control it? And then she says, she seems to be talking right to me. Now that's her talking, like I'm talking right to her. I am startled. I'm even getting goosebumps. My heart is racing. Her words are hitting a chord in me. She continues, can we strip away the comfort zone, the insecurity we feel and experience, all there is to experience, the difficult places in us? We have an inborn instinct for the mystery of life, and there is a curiosity for that mystery in us all. The willingness to surrender, to wake up to all of life, to flow freely, that is called faith. So I didn't know that I had the possibility to say that until I read her words. So with that aspiration that we have, when we identify what that aspiration is, faith is that confidence that we can actually walk that path towards that. Walking the path towards that aspiration is faithing, is that verb, is that ability to do that. It said that faith is regarded as a hand that takes hold of what's profitable. It reaches out. Not like wanting reaches out, but like how faith and aspiration reaches out. Because aspiration is not about wanting. Aspiration is a wholesome willingness to go forth towards what is beneficial. A wholesome willingness to go forth towards what is beneficial. And faith is what helps us to do that. And we grasp at, in a faithing way, what is beneficial to us and to others. Whatever supports our well-being, whatever supports the well-being of others, faith is that energy that seeks the good. So it's different from wanting. Wanting goes after what makes us feel, what is pleasant and what gives us pleasure, and we want it over and over and over again. It's sort of addictive. Wanting itself is addictive. But faith is the energy that's seeking the good. So what is seeking the good? What did the Buddha say is seeking the good? What is the good to seek? So he named four things. The first is, in order to accomplish our Dharma aspiration, it takes seeking out these four. The first is spiritual friendships. So of course, remember when Ananda said to the Buddha one time, Venerable Sir, half of the holy life is spiritual friendships. Is it not so, Venerable Sir? And the Buddha said to Ananda, Do not say that, Ananda. Do not say that. The spiritual life is 100% of the holy life. It's the whole of the holy life. So spiritual friendships are so important. And then the second is hearing and reading the Dharma. So at any time, you can't meditate, when you can't be with your own, this is what I do. When I can't be with my own mind, I put on a Dharma talk. And even though I can't, sometimes I just can't even know what the words are, I just take it in. And sometimes I just listen to Manindra's voice, my first teacher, and Upandita's voice, even in Burmese, and I just feel held under the wings of the Dharma. So hearing and reading the Dharma, even sometimes, you know how you're in bed and you try to read the Dharma sometimes, and you don't even know what you're reading, but you're holding the book, at least it's there. You know, at least your intention is there. And sometimes you even understand a thing or two about it. Opportunities to practice the Dharma. And that means practicing generosity. That means practicing loving kindness in our daily life. That means sitting on the cushion and practicing vipassana and concentration. And the fourth is the cultivation of generosity. Because the cultivation of generosity is the basis for letting go deeply, in letting go of deep, deep pain that we hold in our own hearts. So the word for faith in the Pali language is sada, and which means to establish trust, to establish trust, the establishing of trust. And we can trust in these four things. So if we can really stay connected with our spiritual friendships and even seek more, we can hear and read the Dharma, we can have opportunities that we give ourselves and others to practice, we can cultivate generosity, then this is the establishment of sada, of faith, to place our hearts upon that. So then we know we're headed in the right direction. And tonight I'm just going to speak about faith in oneself, but as for those of you attending the weekend, the full establishing trust on the path means establishing trust in three areas of the path: having faith in our teachers, having faith in the teachings, and having faith in ourselves. But really, having faith in ourselves is what we need to carry all along on the path. It's the basis, it's all throughout, and it's what we end with, ourselves. So opening to all those difficult parts of ourselves, all the ways, big and small, that we learn to just stay the course, to stay the middle path. The Buddha always talked about the middle path. To not take just drastic measures, but to what is the middle path? How can we find a way to open to what we need to open to, where it can be the most easeful for ourselves and for others? The middle path. So whenever I look at how to do what I need to do to stay the course means the middle path. How can we keep doing that? And sometimes we have to take a lot of risks to dare greatly, as they say. When I was a young mother and I had to raise three children on my own, and they were all really young, from 6 to 2 years old, there were so many times I wanted to give up. I was taking care of them. It's a long story, but I had to leave the Philippines, a very difficult political situation, and I had to take the children out of the Philippines. So I did that, and then I raised them on my own. But there were so many times when I just thought, wouldn't it be better if they just went back, or I just went back, you know? And in the Philippines, I had help, but I was on my own now. So many times I wanted to give up, but I didn't give up. And so many times I was criticized for not doing the right thing. But that was a middle path for me, you know, that I had to protect my children from harm. And I saw this, I heard this once on one of those TED programs, and a quote by Theodore Roosevelt. And this is about daring greatly and the effort we take to do what we can to still take those steps, to do what we need to do, to stay on the path, even when we're criticized. It's not the critic who counts, not the woman or man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man or woman who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again, because there is not effort without error and shortcomings. One who knows the great devotion, who spends himself or herself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he or she fails, at least he or she fails while daring greatly. And that's what it takes to trust ourselves, to have faith in ourselves, to be able to dare greatly, to be able to stay with it, even when doubt arises. In our Western world, a lot of people say, I hear it, and even in the Dharma world, you know, people come to retreat and say, I feel so selfish that I'm just here, and, you know, my kids are home without me. Well, my kids were always so happy that I was gone, you know, that I wasn't forcing them to wash the dishes. But when we feel like it's so selfish to take time for ourselves, but who else is going to do it? You know, who else is going to take care of this mind and this body? Nobody else is going to do it for us. We have to do it for ourselves. And I hear over and over again the Buddha's words, you can search the entire universe for one who deserves your love and your care, and you will find no one but yourself who deserves your love and your care more than you do. Because who really is going to do that for us? Everybody else is taking care of themselves. I asked my eldest one when she was about six, when we came to America from the Philippines. I was raised in America, born in the Philippines, went back and forth. And I was asking all the kids on our first Christmas together, when you grow up, what do you think you'd like to do or to be? And my son said he wanted to be a doctor. And then the youngest one, who was almost three, said she wanted to be a nurse. You know. And then the eldest one, Rona, said, well, I want to be me. And I said, I didn't think that was such an intelligent answer, or that she was really answering my question. So I said, really? And I said, why is that? And she said, Mommy, if I'm not me, who's going to be me? And I thought, you know, she's still like that. She's, I mean, she was the one. I mean that in a lot of ways, too. She's a really good lady. So, here's what we want to do. We want to stay on the middle path. We want to know what it takes. We want to develop more and more confidence, so we're planting the seeds. So we want to point our lives in the direction of more wisdom, more compassion, more truth, more understanding the truth of life within us and all around us. We want to be fully who we are, realizing the Eightfold Noble Path, realizing the Four Noble Truths. We want to have confidence in that. So can we go there? Can we go there and really feel that we belong? We belong to ourselves, we belong to this earth around us, that we feel we're part of everything, that we don't have to control it, that we can respond wisely and compassionately, all those good things. And it's not easy. It takes a lot of hard work, doesn't it? I mean, it's been a hell of a ride. It's been a roller coaster ride. I mean, I'm not speaking just for me, right? It's all of you. It's just been a lot of ups and downs, and we hold so tightly onto the rails sometimes. And I guess my kids are with me tonight because I'm remembering when they were small. I'm just remembering Tracy, the youngest one, when I came from the Philippines. She was the youngest then. Then another one was born. But it was a roller coaster ride, and she wanted to go on the roller coaster, and she was still little. And so my two kids were sitting in the back, the two older ones, and I was sitting front of them, next to the smallest one, Tracy. Maybe she was six or seven or something. And we were going up and down and up and down, you know, just the carnival at home. And so as we were, you know, you go down sometimes and people raise their hands, right? And so we were seeing everybody raise their hands. And I was white-knuckling, you know. I wasn't going to let my hands go. And so my kids were, other ones, tapping me on the back. Mom, raise your hands, you know. And so Tracy looked at me, and so she said, she was going like that, and she said, she was saying, Mom, you know, let's do it, or something. So she went, she just raised her hands, and I raised my hands, and I just let go of trying to hold on so tightly. And it was fun, you know. I don't know if I'll do it again, but that's the end of that, you know. But you can be on the roller coaster and not have to hold on so tightly. And you can be in life and feel like you're part of everything and not separate. You're not pushing away because it's unpleasant, or holding on because it's so pleasant that you don't want to let go. So it takes a long time. So this is, but we finally get there, and there's moments, of course. And this is a poem called The Moment by Margaret Atwood. The moment when, after many years of hard work and a long voyage, you stand in the center of your room. Your house, your half acre, your square mile, your island, your country, knowing at least how you got there, and say, I own this, you know, this, your heart, is the same moment when the trees unloose their soft arms from around you, and the birds take back their language, and the cliffs fissure and collapse, and the air moves back from you like a wave, and you can't breathe. No, they whisper. No, they whisper. You own nothing. You were a visitor time after time, climbing the hill, planting the flag, proclaiming, we never belonged to you. You never found us. It was always the other way around. That's pretty deep. It's like we don't have to have control. Compassion and wise response is good. So let's sit for a moment with that. This is from David White. I want to write about faith, about the way the moon rises over cold snow, night after night, faithful even as it fades from fullness, slowly becoming that last curving and impossible sliver of light before the final darkness. But I have no faith in myself. I refuse it even the smallest entry. Let this then, my small poem, like a new moon, slender and barely open, be my first prayer that opens me to faith. Thank you for listening to the Dhamma this evening. I left time for if you have any questions or comments about something about faith for you. What does it mean for you to have faith? I think maybe you should answer my question. That would be good. What does it mean for you to have faith? What do you do to keep on keeping on? I need your advice. Don't be shy. Or you can have a question for me. Yeah, back there. So I want to repeat, that was a really beautiful response. It, just looking at your own life and seeing that you've gotten through, looking at other people, knowing what their lives have been, and they can still smile and laugh. And somehow they're not fallen apart completely forever. Pardon?
They're not defeated.
Yeah. Yeah, that takes a lot of faith and a lot of other things too. Mm-hmm. Courage. Yeah. Anything else?
I forget that I'm really okay.
You forget that you're really okay. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It's good to come and be reminded. You sit here and feel that, yeah, this topic is good. I'm really okay. That's what spiritual friendship's about, huh? Yes.
So, like you said, for me, faith is a lot about letting go.
Faith is about letting go, yeah. Oh, that's really a good one. Yeah, when you're...
The least need for conversation and rationalization and questioning. And
right.
What is the least busy path?
That's really good. So when she's trying to figure out what is the best path, the most beneficial one, the answer is the path of least busyness, where there's not a lot of resistance, questioning, yeah. Sometimes it just comes to us. And when we think too much about it, it does, I'm speaking for myself, when we think too much about it, then it sullies it. It sullies that first intuition or whatever that is. Yeah. Great. Any other good advice? Reflecting that all of the ups and downs, vicissitudes, are not personal. Yeah.
It's just life is like this.
Life is like this. Yeah. It's really good. That's really hard too, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. When I lost faith,
Mm-hmm. Days I'm not actually awake or alive, anything going on around me. Sometimes all it takes is just me open my eyes and see something outside of myself.
Yes. Put Down the Weight of Your Aloneness by David White, That's beautiful, yeah. When you feel that you've lost faith in yourself, you realize that there's loneliness. Did you say aloneness or loneliness? I want to be precise, yeah.
Loneliness.
And all it takes is opening her eyes and seeing that there's a tea kettle, there's this happening, that. And I sense that another thing you're saying is that you feel connected? Yeah, there's connection. Yeah, right. I think that's what this poem was saying too. You know, it's not like we own that, but we're connected to it all. It was interesting. Just a response to that in terms of our grandfather teacher in this tradition is Mahasi Sayadaw. And I've been helping translate an old book that he wrote during the war about how to practice Vipassana. I wasn't translating it, but I was helping in the writing of the book to make the archaic language sound more in our own language. So one of the things I came across is that he said, when we've got our eyes closed and it becomes difficult here, to open your eyes and really get connected with things out there. And actually to feel that, you know, they're seeing taking, not just to the object, but they're seeing taking place. There's hearing, you know, there's tasting. If there's food that you're eating, there's feeling, you know, the wind on your face, and all those things. It's not just the object, but the actual experience of feeling, tasting, hearing, yeah, seeing, all of that. And so I thought that was quite practical and actually profound, you know, because you feel you're not really alone. When I practiced in Burma, there were so many times so hard, you know, and harsh. And many times I would open my eyes, and it would be so helpful to see people around me. Just, isn't that true when you've been in retreat? Just open your, just to see the person in front of you, no matter what position they're in, they can be just like that, or, you know, but just to see somebody right in front of you, or see the whole room just doing what they could do to stay in that room. You know, some people are really, and some, you know, there's all different ways that we are. Yeah. Yes. Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. It's very comforting. That's a good one. Yeah. So just to succinct it, what Lynn said was that she finds herself having more faith in that she doesn't know, because she tends to fall into fear about what could happen. And then I think you said when she thinks back at times when she thought that something could happen, it didn't happen. And so she doesn't really know. And I think that's more realistic, what you're saying, Lynn, than to think that we know. Because we really don't know. We can plan it so precisely, and it's still not going to go by the plan. That's why things have to just be good enough, you know. That, yeah. So I want to repeat that and put that in a nutshell, because that's really important as well as all the others, is to have faith in that we really don't know. That's comforting, isn't it? Yeah. I kind of similarly, I always, for a long time, felt kind of identified with being intuitive. You know, being a woman, and I'm sensitive, and you know, I would intuit something, and then I get scared, or I get happy, or what. And I'd look back, and I think mostly 90% of my intuition wasn't really, it was nowhere. It was just a passing thought, you know. So I would actually a lot of times feel relieved that my intuition didn't come true. And I would remember that intuition I had, that really was just a passing thought. Yeah. Anything else? Those are really good examples. Sometimes the simplest thing is the best. Yes. Not. So the immediate for you when the question was asked, what is it to have faith? It was not needing to ask a question about it, but just to show up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to be present with whatever that is that's happening then. That's great. So what did you do when there was a time when it was difficult for you? What did you do to keep going? Did you call a friend? You know, spiritual friendship. When you felt it was... I remember for me, just as an example, there were times when in the past, you know, when Steve and I would wonder, how are we going to keep going? And I would say, you know, with keeping our lives going, with the sanctuary that we had been trying to build and everything. And I would say, well, I think we have to give more. You know, it would be the opposite of trying to get more to keep it going. But my faith was that in giving, that's how it would come. And so it's happened that way too. So sometimes we do things counterintuitive, we think is going to help, but it does help. Like a lot of people say, we need to have faith by finding out the answers, asking questions, but for you it's not asking questions. And that's really valuable. You know, it's just to be with what's going on here right now. So anybody have any questions? Right. Any more answers? Okay, this has been a lovely... Oh, Susan, one more. Uh-huh, to listen to me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When you lose faith or you feel, you listen to music. Yeah. And we can listen mindfully. We can listen with just the attention there. That's all that's happening. Yeah. I do that too. Sometimes I play Tibetan bells. You know, it's on a CD, and I just play the bells, and just, it's not even a tune, it's just bells that are ringing. And for people that come to me and have very difficult health situation and they can't really meditate because maybe they're dying or they have a very difficult health situation, I give them a copy of Bells and just listen to that. It's very calming and you're present with it. So find what you need to do. And if you want to take up this question and answer it while you're home or any time, to answer the question, what is your highest good enough aspiration for yourself? For now. I mean, probably it'll change, but for now. Okay, so I'm just offering a blessing to all of you, a humble blessing from all of my teachers, starting from the Buddha all the way down, just all out to you, that may you know your highest aspiration. May you be fulfilled by that in this lifetime, somewhere towards it. May there be no obstacles on your path. And if there are obstacles, may you have the wisdom and compassion to know how to navigate through them for yourself and for others. Thank you.